How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is the first time we have talked to everybody here in 338 hours and 13 minutes. That's right, the stopwatch I used to record segments apparently had not shut off since the last time we did the show, so I know to the minute how long it's been since the last program. 3 weeks since we've been on the air, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to open up today with all of the news of this week, including the TNA Genesis pay-per-view, an injury to John Cena. We'll talk about some UFC cuts, the Strikeforce tournament, and a lot of other news. And then, if we have time, we're going to get into some of the big stories over the last couple of weeks. We've not talked about Jeff Hardy planning to plead guilty, allegedly, to drug charges coming up on January 20th, which is rather interesting, seeing as how there is a TNA pay-per-view today. He is still the champion, and presumably, I shouldn't even say presumably. I don't know what's going to happen, but one would think that perhaps he would lose a championship today or at the next set of tapings. I don't know if he necessarily won a champion who has allegedly pled guilty to drug charges, as has been rumored, but and I shouldn't even say rumored. His counsel has made this statement in newspaper articles, but that's something to discuss on the program today as we run down the TNA Genesis pay-per-view lineup. Also talk about Hulk Hogan's surgery, UFC 125. It was a big night on New Year's Eve in Japan and on January 4th for the Tokyo Dome. We'll talk about two big events. Mike will run down the pro wrestling. We'll talk about the MMA as well. And later on, next hour, we're going to be joined by a guest, Mikey Whipwreck, former ECW heavyweight champion. It's going to be on the show. We'll be talking about what's going on in his life. As we head into 2011, we've been working to get guests on the show every single week on this program. That's right, there's a New Year's resolution for you. New guests on Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday here on Sports Byline USA. So a lot of stuff coming up after the break. We'll take your emails as well and perhaps some phone calls. A packed show coming up later on today. So we'll be back in just a moment to start off with the TNA Genesis pay-per-view preview. Starts immediately after the show goes off the air. So we'll talk about that here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. In hour two, we're going to be joined by former ECW champion Mikey Whipwreck. Got a lot of stuff to talk about with him, including the death of Val Puccio, who was the original Undertaker and who worked with Mikey back in his days in ECW. So we'll talk about that with Mikey coming up in hour number two. And Mike, how's it going this weekend? How was your new year?
Not too bad. It didn't seem like 330 hours ago, but I guess the time flies when you're not doing a show.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time here, and that leads us to the first TNA pay-per-view of the year. And speaking of making changes, for example, on this program, we're going to be joined by a big-time guest every week, at least for the next couple of weeks until I lose interest. But seriously, the TNA Genesis pay-per-view is kicking off 2011 with what looks to be a great show on paper. And hopefully that can continue throughout 2011. I guess we shall see. But and I shouldn't say every match is looking good, because Matt Morgan and Mr. Anderson is on this show, everyone. It is a match to determine the number one contender for the TNA World Heavyweight title. And on paper, quite frankly, this looks like it could be a train wreck match.
Yeah, it very well could be, although I'm holding out hope, much like there's some people out there, I'm sure, as well, that no matter what happens here, if the title gets off of Jeff Hardy relatively soon, that probably would be a good idea. And as long as Mr. Anderson were to come out on top here, I wouldn't feel too bad. Not the biggest Matt Morgan fan in the world, and yeah, Mr. Anderson, I hope, comes out of this with at least being the one for the next title shot, because I just can't fathom more Matt Morgan than Jeff Hardy either.
Yeah, the Matt Morgan deal initially started after Mr. Anderson got hurt, and I guess this is their way to, I would think that it would be over by now, but apparently I was wrong. It's been several months of Matt Morgan headlining, and it was his big chance on top. I don't really feel he delivered in the role, and I would guess that Mr. Anderson is their man, but I guess we shall see. But I would expect that Anderson will win tonight. I suppose they could do another sort of weird sort of deal and have another multi-man match on TV or the next pay-per-view. But I will say a win for Mr. Anderson in this match here tonight. We've also got, and that may be the main event, in fact, as the champion is not even on the show. Jeff Hardy is not wrestling on Genesis. Why? I don't know, unless they ended up putting him as the mystery opponent for Rob Van Dam. That is the, I guess, one of the big matches on the show. Could end up being the semi-main. Rob Van Dam versus Immortals mystery opponent. There have been a lot of different rumors out about who that person is. I know there are a lot of people thinking it's going to be Matt Hardy. I don't know if that's going to be the case. But certainly, as far as storylines go, that one would make sense. Although, one would think that if you're going to bring Matt Hardy into TNA, you would bring him in initially as a babyface. And if he's the mystery opponent that RVD has to get through in order to get to Jeff Hardy, that would indicate that he would be a heel. And quite frankly, with TNA, it would not surprise me one bit if they miscast him in his first night in. So we shall see. If you had to make a prediction as far as who the mystery opponent would be, Mike, who would you say?
I was actually thinking Matt Hardy, too, although I don't think if you bring him in as a heel that makes too much of a difference anyway.
As far as?
I just don't think it's, you know, I think they're the same people are going to cheer him that are going to cheer him, but I think Jeff Hardy's done pretty well. I mean, I thought he's done real well, at least on TNA TV, with doing the Antichrist thing and all that sort of stuff. So, and with the YouTube stuff and all that, I mean, obviously, people will see Jeff and Matt all the time together anyway. I think just bringing him in alongside his brother would make it makes the most sense. People are going to cheer him or boom, whatever they're going to do is fine, but I think putting him in with Jeff, it makes the most sense.
Now, Matt did put up a picture yesterday, I think on his Twitter, somewhere online, of supposedly his new haircut, but you only see the back of a man's head, so quite frankly, it could be anyone, but it is a buzzed head, not completely shaved, but buzzed down to, say, a number one or so on the Clippers, and an H, I believe, is shaved into the back of his head, and Matt had claimed that he was going to get a haircut for the new year, and I presume it is some sort of swerve, and somebody just sent the picture in, and he put it on his site, and he has not cut off all of his hair, but I suppose it's possible.
Well, maybe he's concerned about, like, passing out face first, and he just wants people to be able to know, okay, that's me, make sure you pick me up. If you see the H, pick me up, I've fallen over.
Sure, yeah. So anyway, that is the big match on the show as well. We've also got Brother Devon and Bully Ray, former tag team champions, having a singles match together, and been built up hit and miss on TV. I thought the first angle that they did was very, very good, and I thought the angle they did on the last TV where they teased giving a street fight away on television for free with no build, but instead it didn't happen. And they got in a fight in the parking lot that had to be broken up by goofballs, and then Bully ended up giving him a cheap shot as they were being pulled apart. So I thought that was pretty good. And I think it's going to be a fun match. I think the people are going to be into it. Depends on where they're going from here. If the feud is going to continue, then obviously I would think Bully Ray is going to win. But I have high hopes for this match.
I don't have high hopes for it. In fact, I would have been fine with it continuing on because I got to be honest, as cheap as it was, the Bubba Ray finding a new Devon each week did actually kind of make me laugh. But no, it's going to be a big sloppy mess. Hopefully it doesn't go on too long. But yeah, I figure Bubba Ray wins.
You think
Bully
a bad
Ray,
match?
That is.
You think a bad match here?
I don't. I think it's just going to be two Dudleys slamming into each other, and there's going to be plunder and whatnot. So I'm not expecting an epic or anything like that. But you know, I don't want this to take up too much time because I need more room for Doug Williams and AJ Styles.
Well, it is Doug Williams and AJ for the television title. If AJ loses, he is out of fortune and immortal. And I love these guys, and I think their first match was the best because they just went in there and had a great match. And I think that this match is going to be very good for 95% of it. But the fact that it's got a stipulation attached pretty much to me ensures that there's going to be a run-in or interference or some sort of screw job. And that kind of makes me sad because they're best when they just go out there and have a great match. And I don't think you need all of this idiocy, but apparently TNA feels that you do need this idiocy, which is why we had a 15-minute Iron Man match with The Fall during a commercial break on television. But hopefully they can, you know, hopefully 99% of the match is in-ring and only 1% is the whatever the finish is going to be. But I don't know. They're building up so strong that AJ is going to be bumped out of Fortune that I actually expect him to win the championship, and then they kick him out of Fortune anyway, because that would be a swerve.
Oh, hopefully that doesn't happen, because obviously, I mean, at some point down the line, no matter when it is, I see AJ Styles is going to be out of Fortune and being a good guy all over again. But I think he wins tonight, he stays in Fortune, and everything is nice and glossed over, at least for a little while.
Is your son making a prediction there in the background?
He's making a prediction that he'll never have sugar again. I'm making that prediction, because, yeah, it's going to be a long show.
Madison Rayne and Mickie James for the Knockouts title. I had a stat about Madison Rayne. I'm going to find it here. Why don't you give me your prediction, and I'm going to find this stat that somebody sent to me about her championship reign.
Well, I'm going to take Madison Rayne in this, just because it's TNA 2. You know, they're going to have the regular match first, which will set up all sorts of wackiness and ridiculousness to go along the line. Mickie James is going to win the title, I would assume, at some point, but I think Rayne wins this one with some sort of chicanery or interference.
Yeah, I think you're, I don't know, I would not... I presume that Madison loses because that's kind of her gimmick in singles matches. Basically, I think that in the entire time that Madison Rayne has been with TNA, she's only won two singles matches in her entire career. So let's see now. Oh, yeah, I've got the stats right here. This is from Stacy. When Madison won the Knockouts title, I pointed out that she had never won a singles match. I remember that... In 2011, I figured I'd see how she went the rest of the year. Keeping in mind, she held the title for about 3 months during the year. Madison has now won a total of 3 singles matches. One was the Tara laydown screwjob thingy on Impact, which hardly counts. The other two were retiring Tara at Sacrifice and retiring Roxy at Slammiversary. Nothing since then. She has essentially won 2 actual singles matches in her entire TNA career, which includes a 3-month Knockouts title reign. So there you go. And as far as Velvet, I remember at the time Velvet had never won a singles match either, won a mud wrestling match, won by DQ. And Velvet, having started in late 2007 and having been there her entire career, has won 1 singles match in over 3 years. So we're going to head to a break. Everybody chew on that stat. We'll talk about it when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Chewing over the fact that in her entire TNA career, Velvet Sky has won 1 singles match in her entire career. And Madison is now on 2 actual wins in singles competition, if you don't count laying down for Tara on Impact. She's won 2 times. 2 singles matches in her entire TNA career, which now includes a 3-4 month Knockouts title reign. And Mike foolishly is predicting she's going to beat Mickie James tonight. So, Mike, I think that you're incorrect.
See, the law of averages is in my favor tonight. Now, at some point,
wait,
she has got to
wait.
Win one, so it might as well be now. And actually, if they're not counting Tara laying down for her, then you could always have something in this match, too. Because, I mean, what's the odds she's going to, like, win this with an Indian deathlock or something like that? I mean, it is TNA. It is the women's division. I mean, it doesn't have to be necessarily a clean win here. She could get knocked out and fall on top of her.
That's true, but that would still be a win, which the odds, in fact, are against her. Mm-hmm. Jay Lethal.
So impossible here. Just impossible. And it's not time for Mickie James yet. They need to drag this out.
Jay Lethal and Kazarian for the X Division Championship, and this should be a pretty good match. I don't think that, I know that, I don't know.
I didn't even remember this match was on here, to be honest with you.
Really? I knew it was on here. I'm not the biggest fan in the world of Kazarian. I think that he does a lot of moves. I don't think he's a great worker, but hopefully they can put something together here, and I expect it to be pretty decent, but not like the match of the night or anything like that.
No, I can see Lethal retaining and then AJ rubbing it into Kazarian that he's still in Fortune with his belt.
We've got the Motor City Machine Guns against Beer Money in what should be an awesome match. They feuded forever. They had great matches. They split apart to do something different, and now they've brought them back together again. And I should not complain that we're seeing a match we've seen a million times, because it's actually probably going to be the best match on the show.
No, it's just a matter of then, okay, what swerve comes at the end here? Because obviously, you know, they'd like to keep this thing going for as long as they possibly could between the two teams on TV and into the next pay-per-views and everything else. So I would say, you know, let's just say the title gets held up tonight. That would be a TNA thing to do. So no results on a pay-per-view where you pay to see a result. And I'd say the title gets held up. We'll find out more on Impact.
Then we've got Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle in what they're calling a double J, double M, A exhibition. And our favorite Wikipedia, I noticed, has now listed that under the category of professional wrestling match types. So when you go to Wikipedia and you look at, for example, an arm wrestling match or a Clockwork Orange House of Fun match, they have now added the double J, double M, A. So, forget what the hell the rest of it was. Exhibition match. That's right. What it is it's I don't even know. I've been thinking about this match for a while. So I think the idea is that Jeff Jarrett, for some reason, has decided he's an MMA fighter. But in fact, he's not. But he's going on TV and doing MMA exhibitions. I don't really know why. As I really look back at the storyline, I can't for the life of me figure this out. Like, what's going on? He's just decided he's going to get heat by beating up fans. I mean, why is he doing this? What is his motivation for this?
So, well, he started off against a Samoan submission machine, and he was going to show up that said machine.
I see. That's
with
right.
With all of his wacky moves. In fact, they all have all been double J, double M, single A exhibition matches that he's had with the fans and whatnot, where he was putting up his own money. Because I think the tagline after the Joe match was, he was really, you know, saying, you know, some people were saying, this is the biggest one of my career. And I said, I don't know, but it's got to be the biggest one of my MMA career. So I guess that was the open contract. And that's how, because it's an exhibition, that's how Angle has backed his way in.
That's right. He beat Samoa Joe, and so he decided he was a shooter. And so then he went on TV and was beating all these geeks. But then he beat some of them, like some actual, you know, names with his MMA. So at that point, I thought, well, maybe he's in storyline, he has been training for MMA. But then I guess it comes out that he had not been training in MMA. And then they did an angle on television where Red's brother nearly killed him in the MMA challenge, which I should add, on television this week, led to nothing. There was no follow-up whatsoever. And now Kurt Angle has returned. They're going to have an exhibition, and we're supposed to pay for it. And I'm not sure what we're supposed to expect is going to happen. That, like, Either Angle destroys him in like 30 seconds, which I'm paying for that, or they have a competitive match, which, I don't know, Kurt Angle can't beat Jeff Jarrett in an exhibition challenge in less than 30 seconds. That seems odd. So I don't know what's going on here. I wish they would just say it's Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett and they're going to wrestle.
Why would you think they would do that?
I don't know.
Besides, you can't have him wrestle yet. You need to figure out a way to get Angle back in. But, yeah, I mean, realistically, and with the matches they have on this show, you can have Lethal and Kazarian go a little while. This really should be, you know, Honky Tonk Man Ultimate Warrior-esque, really, or something like that. I mean, where it's just, you know, they wipe it out, because obviously it's probably going to continue on with at least a little something after this, but it should just be Angle going in there, wiping him out, and then, I don't know, getting chased off by the rest of Immortal.
So basically, we do have the poster for a pay-per-view where a guy who is fired is on the poster, at least in storyline, because Kurt Angle is all over that poster. It is tonight. It's on pay-per-view. It's 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. As noted on paper, it looks to be a stronger show than usual, so hopefully it's pretty good. And I guess we'll see what happens. Dave Meltzer is going to be up on WrestlingObserver.com running down the event from top to bottom. If you decide to buy the pay-per-view, want his thoughts on the show, or if you don't buy the pay-per-view and want to get the results, it's up at WrestlingObserver.com immediately after the show goes off the air. And then later on tonight, Dave and I will be up with a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll talk about all the matches in detail, all of the news coming out of the show, and preview tomorrow's Raw. And speaking of previews and Raw and that sort of thing, Mike Tuffenuff is coming back. And what are your thoughts on a show that brought us Miz and Morrison, who last week fought for the championship on Raw, is now coming back to try to create some new stars?
I wasn't a big fan of the idea when it started, but it did a really good job sucking me in. And they, you know, obviously outside of the Linda Miles, Jackie Gaeta season, where Kenny King, who's in ROH right now and doing pretty well for himself, ended up getting the short end of that stick. It did do a good job as far as making itself an entertaining TV show, and I'm not sure. I heard all the rumors and reasons of why they wanted it to go away, and people didn't WWE that were against the show, but I think it can actually work out again as an hour-long reality show. I don't think it's a bad idea. It's as long as they don't do what they did with NXT, everything is fine. I would actually utilize. Instead of, I think they did like different trainers and things like that, but I hope they utilize some of the guys in Florida a little bit more as far as all the ex-wrestlers that are there, like your Steve Kearns and Dusty Rhodes and all of those guys that are down there, and they actually, actually have them on the show a little bit talking to these guys, because from how it sounds, they don't want people with no experience or, real rookies or anything like that. They're going out of their way to have people with a little bit of experience, so I think them mixing in with some of the guys from the past, I don't think is a bad idea.
Pretty sure they're filming in L.A., which might cause a problem as far as bringing in these trainers from Florida, unless they want to really pay for everybody's flight out there.
So do they have like a new tracks facility set up out there?
No, they're going to be in I don't know actually where they're going to be training, but they're going to be living in a house. It's one of those deals again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now they are going to be airing this. The first episode is the night after WrestleMania. And it's going to be immediately after WWE at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific. And I guess it would be Eastern as well. And, then the week after that, they move to before Raw. And I'm not sure about that. I think the strongest time slot for this show is post-Raw and not pre-Raw as a lead-in. And what are your thoughts?
I would actually figure post-Raw as well. I mean, it won't hurt my feelings, considering that I forget what's on in that slot, the CSI or JAG or one of those shows that are on there, so it's not like it would hurt my feelings if it was on there and I didn't have to stay up as late. But with that said, yeah, I think you get, however many, the 3.1 or whatever it is you get for Raw, you want as much of that kind of dipping over into the show until it's at least established. And then I think if you did that, then you can move it off into another day or another slot on USA's schedule just to see if it could stand out on its own. But you want to try to draw people in first, and I think that would be a good idea that way. I mean, no matter how many times you say it on a Raw TV show, when it moves back to 8 o'clock, people have no clue that it's on. No matter how many times you tell them, they always forget. So to have it on afterwards, I think, is a better idea.
An interesting stat, or maybe not a stat, an interesting fact, is that if this show starts the night after WrestleMania and it runs for 10 weeks, which is the plan, and that means we get 10 weeks of 3-hour WWE blocks, that would indicate that there's not going to be a 3-hour draft Raw during that period, because that would require 4 hours of WWE programming, which I don't see happening, an 8 to midnight slot.
And so, you would need it anyway, though.
There's a possibility that that could mean there's no draft plan for this year, which is interesting.
Or even if there is, though, I mean, what you can do with the draft is you can do what you do in 2 hours, but with all their other stuff that they push as far as the application, the website, and all that other stuff, they can drag that thing out, or you actually have SmackDown on a Tuesday night if they really wanted to continue it.
John Cena's been off for the last couple of weekends. He injured his hip in a cage match with Wade Barrett at an event in Pennsylvania, I believe was how they announced it. Didn't want to say Wilkes-Barre or Wilkes-Barre, however you pronounce it. So anyway, he's out for a while. They're expecting him back for tomorrow's Raw. That was the tentative plan when he first was diagnosed with his injury. We'll see what happens. He missed the show last week, which was quite fascinating, because when John Cena lost the match at the Survivor Series and was, I don't want to say forced to retire, but he left the company, supposedly, and never missed a single show. And then, after he has been rehired, supposedly, with the company, they have no problem taking him off the show for a week. So, we'll talk about that when we get back. Got a lot more to come. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday on Sports Byline USA from 3 to 5 Pacific, 6 to 8 Eastern. And, of course, always up at WrestlingObserver.com. If you like what you hear and you want more, we do about 20 audio shows every single week at WrestlingObserver.com. Myself, Mike, number of other contributors. And Mike, in fact, does a show along with Adam Summers, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, talking Japanese pro wrestling. And before we get into the Royal Rumble update here, Mike, tell us a little bit about this year's Tokyo Dome, which actually featured a number of TNA stars.
It did indeed. And the Tokyo Dome, year after year after year, is a traditional event New Japan always puts on January 4th. And as the years have gone on, much like in Japanese wrestling, it doesn't get the attendance that it could anymore. Or it's just 70,000 seat Tokyo Dome, and about, Dave reported, 18,000 people. Thought it looked like it was a little bit more than that. They announced 40,000, but the show itself, quality match wise, it looked like a dome show on paper. It was actually a pretty good show, but it wasn't spectacular. There was no big news coming out of it or anything like that, other than maybe Jeff Hardy having possibly the worst title match inside the dome in history.
After promising the best,
Tetsuya Naito, who had spent a lot of his time in CMLL in the last year, teaming up with Yujiro, was in some pretty good feuds there, but he's being looked at as New Japan's one of his, the future singles stars, and this was going to be a good year for him, and they wanted to get it off right, and it's been played up in Japan that Naito was sent to TNA on a learning excursion, and I think he may have popped up on an Explosion show here or there, but it really wasn't made out to be a big deal, and Jeff Hardy in the press conference the day before basically acted like he didn't want to be there, at least came across that way, didn't even know the opponent he was facing, and just said you were going to see a great wrestling match. Well, about 20 seconds into the match or 30 seconds into the match, he blew a leapfrog, and from there it just kind of went downhill. It was a one-star match at best, and that may be being generous. It was just a very poor performance by him, but with that being said, Beer Money did a great job facing off against Strongman from CMLL, who is just a freakish Scott Steiner, Ron Waterman, except he's bigger-looking guy, teaming up with Manabu Nakanishi as a tag team called Muscle Orchestra. And they face off in a three-way against Prince Albert, or now he's known as Giant Bernard, and Carl Anderson. And Anderson and Bernard ended up getting the win over Beer Money, but Beer Money did a good job in the pre-show press conference with hyping up the fact they've been there before and how they were representing TNA going in there against New Japan, but Bernard and Carl Anderson ended up getting the win there. RVD was over, facing off against Toru Yano. And what was basically just a kind of a, not a throwback ECW-style match, but it was just kind of two guys banging into each other, RVD's match, and he ended up getting the win out of that. So the TNA participation that was on there was average at best, but James Storm especially was really the star of the TNA performers that were on there. The best match was Prince Devitt retaining the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title over Kota Ibushi, Shinsuke Nakamura defeating Goshi Ozaki from NOAH, and then the main event, which was Hiroshi Tanahashi winning the IWGP title for the fifth time by defeating Satoshi Kojima. So those matches were pretty good. And there weren't any bad matches throughout the whole thing. La Sombra looked really, really good in his match that they had with some CMLL guys and Jushin Liger. So it wasn't a bad show at all, but it wasn't a very newsworthy show as far as a whole lot of big, big stuff coming out of it.
I thought Jeff had said he was going to have the best match in the history of the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, that was the bumper leading into the match, and I mean, Brian, it was really bad. I mean, he botched that leapfrog, and you could see, if this was Koji Kanemoto, at some point during the match, he would have just slapped Jeff as hard as he possibly could to try to get something out of him. I mean, he looked, and for whatever the reason was, he looked blown up. 30 seconds into the match, he just did not look like he wanted to be there. He seemed to be selling, I guess he burned his ass or something like that going into the show, and he looked like he was selling more than any of Naito's moves. So it was really, I mean, it was very, very, very disappointing, and it was just one of those things, especially where it was positioned and what it was supposed to mean to kind of start Naito's year. It just came across really, really bad.
Speaking of Jeff's stunt that he apparently did for one of his internet shows, what do you think of these guys being geeks on the internet?
I think it's a bunch of geeks on the internet. I mean, there's a reason I like watching Tosh.0, because I can't believe how stupid people are, and they get it put up on the internet constantly, and you know, there's enough people trying to take photos of you and messing with you as it is without you knowing it. Why would you want to do that on your own? And that's the biggest thing with Matt Hardy. No matter how you bring him in, I mean, it's just, you know, it's working, I guess, for their fan base. I guess there's people out there that really enjoy it and they want to see what wackiness comes next or anything like that. I just don't happen to be one of those guys, and I think it's just, you know, they've done a really good job showing their ass. The thing that they did on Justin TV, the streaming thing where they were sitting there drinking, and the CM Punk comments at the diner. It's just, I guess it's working for somebody, but it just doesn't really work for me.
On Friday at WrestlingObserver.com, I did a open line show where we took calls for an hour on a variety of subjects. And one thing that people really wanted to talk about was the Royal Rumble. And the Royal Rumble is like that show where every year, without fail, all of my old wrestling friends had no longer watched wrestling. They just have long since given up. This is the show they still care about. And I guess it's just remnants from the glory days of the fun of picking a winner for the Royal Rumble. And I know that some people do Royal Rumble pools and trying to figure out who's going to win. And, of course, that person gets their shot at WrestleMania. And I guess it still means something to a lot of people. And maybe, you know, maybe in 2011 it actually means more to former fans than it does to current fans. We've got a 30-man Battle Royal. One man enters every however many minutes they decide. It always changes. And the winner gets a shot at WrestleMania. And also on that show, on the undercard, The Miz and Randy Orton for the WWE title, and most likely Edge and Dolph Ziggler for the world title. And Mike, what are you thinking of this show this year?
I'm thinking if they need to bring in more gimmicks and don't announce them. Don't do what they did a couple years ago, even though it made sense when they were like, oh, Goldust is coming back and Mr. Perfect. And it doesn't have to be the Honky Tonk Man either, but always having somebody just completely random out of nowhere in the Royal Rumble is always a cool thing. And it's just, it's the concept of the thing is what always gets people into it, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. There's been so many highlight reel things from Axe and Smash, you know, starting off against each other and beating each other up, to Taka Mikanoshu doing a face plant when he got tossed out. So it's always a good show for stuff like that. And you know, it's where WWE does their best focus. It starts at the Royal Rumble, and then it ends up hitting the draft, and then it dies off. But the first couple months of the year leading into WrestleMania are usually always awesome.
It's usually the best business period of the year as well for WWE. And if you had to make a pick as far as who is going to win the Royal Rumble this year, and the only people I guess we can really eliminate would be Miz, Orton, and I guess Edge and Ziggler at this point, although you never know. They could do a match and somehow end up in the Rumble or whatever. But given the available participants, who would you pick as a logical winner for this year's Rumble?
I'm trying to think of, you know, I would assume, especially now that Wade Barrett's over on SmackDown, it would make the most sense if it's, to me, Wade Barrett and The Undertaker. I guess just depending on who the champions are, I can see Orton winning it, to do Orton and Miz, although, you know, it would drive everybody nuts to see, even though Orton wasn't in the mix last year, he had the legacy thing going on. I think just the thought of him being back in the mix would drive a lot of people nuts, but I could see that making some sense, just depending on, you know, also whoever. I can't see it being Alberto. You know, I'll go with Orton right now.
Did you say you cannot see it as being Alberto?
Not yet.
Hmm.
Although I could see him in a title match on the show, I'm not sure, even though they are pushing him hard, and obviously him being showcased on Raw over the last couple weeks, you know, obviously, you know, gigantic plans for him, and deservedly so, but with that said, I don't necessarily see him winning the Rumble quite yet. I think they're going to go, I would assume they would go with somebody safer.
Yeah, I would pick Alberto at this point. I think that Alberto and Edge would be a a fine match for WrestleMania. I think, especially as Edge is still at this point a babyface, despite the Paul Bearer Kane storyline several weeks back. But I think that would be a good one. And Orton has already won a couple of years ago. And if you look back at like the last, actually, you go back to, there was a thread about this on our board. I mean, really, I don't know if there's been a surprise winner in a long time. I guess the Brett Luger tie was interesting in the sense that it was a tie. But, I mean, most of the time, it was like 97 and 98 with Steve Austin. I guess 99 with Vince McMahon was kind of a surprise. In fact, I don't think anybody expected him to win, to be honest with you. But I'd have to look back and see what the build was for that show. But, you know, in recent years, it's, I guess Benoit perhaps would have been somewhat of a surprise, but you had like Undertaker, Cena, Orton, Edge, all the usual players over the last couple of years won, and, you know, I could see maybe Cena making a comeback and winning again, or Orton, but I really think if you want to do something to remind people that this is a special show, someone new is going to get a shot at WrestleMania, it's a big deal, and I think a guy like Alberto Del Rio would be a perfect winner, because he's a rising star, people see him as a future champion, I'm sure, and, you know, whether he wins at WrestleMania is a completely different matter, but I do think that he would be a great winner this year.
Well, could you see Cena taking the title off of Miz? Because I think Cena and Alberto at WrestleMania would actually be great.
I could see it happening. I would think that maybe a Cena-Miz WrestleMania match is more likely. These things change on a whim, but I know that for a while the idea was that Miz was going to be champion going into the February pay-per-view. I don't know if they've figured out March yet, but I know they've got a plan for all of the top guys. And I could see Miz defending the title through WrestleMania on one side, and an Edge defending it through WrestleMania on the other side. I think that they may actually extend out the Edge Dolph Ziggler feud through the February pay-per-view. So, you know, they're probably doing it at Mania. It's not official yet, but I would expect, or I'm sorry, Rumble. I expect that they will make that match. And then you could do a rematch in February, or perhaps an Elimination Chamber. That's something of that nature. And, you know, then end up with, you know, the matches we were talking about for Mania with Miz, Cena, and Edge and Rodriguez. I guess he's not Rodriguez. Del Rio. I was using his shoot name. Sorry, everybody. His ring announcer is not getting a title shot at WrestleMania. So anyway, that would be my thought there. And you watched SmackDown. How was the show?
It was a good week of TV. I didn't see TNA. And that's not a joke or anything like that, as far as saying it. But, I mean, Ring of Honor, Raw, and SmackDown, I thought were all actually really, really good. The show opened up with the Last Man Standing match for the world title, which, you know, it started off kind of slow, but I was, you know, satisfied with the result. And Edge finally, you know, puts it, you know, Kane to bed and puts the feud to bed by using a concerto on his leg so he couldn't get up again. Then they had the IC title match with Kofi and Dolph Ziggler to end that. Kofi wins. Vicky immediately restarts the match back up. It looks like Dolph's going to win, but Kofi hits the, I think it was the Paradise Kick, and ended up getting the win again right off the bat. They go to commercial break. They come back, and Vicky and Dolph are, you know, Dolph's teasing that he's leaving Vicky. So she comes out later and makes the triple threat match for the number one contendership, a four-way, which Ziggler ends up winning over Big Show, Drew McIntyre, who is still pursuing Kelly as they continue that storyline on, and Cody Rhodes. But as far as
let's go to a break.
Both shows, they did a great job.
All right, let's go to a break. We'll talk about it a little more when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking the TV from the past week in the previous segment. I just wanted to make mention that I did watch Impact this week. And although I felt the show fell off a cliff in the last half hour, I thought they actually did one of the better Impacts in a while. They actually focused on the pay-per-view matches. They built up some pay-per-view matches. There was not the usual booking and logic holes that we normally see throughout the show. It did I was not a big fan of the last half hour of the show, particularly the sit-down interview with Matt Morgan and Mr. Anderson. I thought it was infuriating. I think they're both characters that it's almost impossible to like, and they're both supposed to be baby faces, setting up a match that I have absolutely no desire to see, with a storyline that's just... I cannot get into the head injury storyline, particularly when there's this supposed grave concern about Mr. Anderson wrestling today with a head injury. And meanwhile, he's wrestled two of the last 4 weeks on television, and nothing has come of it. So I watched the show, and it just struck me as these people don't even watch their own programming. They don't even remember their own storylines. And keep in mind, they taped 4 shows in 4 days. So how you don't even remember your storylines that you taped the day before, I have no idea. But anyway, as noted, that show is coming up immediately following this program. So we'll have the full play-by-play on the Wrestling Observer website with Dave Meltzer. That's, of course, WrestlingObserver.com. And then later on tonight, an exclusive show, myself and Dave running down the TNA Genesis pay-per-view. We'll talk about all the matches in detail, and we'll talk about this coming week's Raw. They've actually got several weeks before the Royal Rumble, so a lot of storylines can be wrapped up, I presume, and I could be wrong based on the Morrison-Miz match last week where they kind of blew off Morrison's title shot. But prior to that match, there had been plans of doing a four-way with Miz, Morrison, Jerry Lawler, and Randy Orton. So we may see that match Monday or in the near future, or they may just drop it cold and Lawler will be out to dry yet again. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more news. We'll probably take some emails. And then later on in the hour, Mikey Whipwreck joins the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to cover in the next hour. We're going to talk some news. We'll take some email questions as well. And then at the 20-minute mark, after the second break here on the program, we're joined by Mikey Whipwreck, former ECW heavyweight champion. We're going to talk about his neck injury. We'll talk about a guy he worked with in the early days of ECW. Val Puccio passed away. He was one of the original men to use the Undertaker gimmick. We'll talk about that here on the program and a lot more. And I wanted to do this email question before we get to the next break here in a couple of minutes. Mike, he has been cut from UFC. Does Strikeforce go for Brandon Vera? Your thoughts?
Yes, you might as well. You know, it's not like you have to worry about, God, we're getting a cast off, because I'm not sure how visible, you know, a lot of the Showtime shows, especially the Strikeforce shows, are anyway. So you might as well put him on, you know, try to get him. He can't go to Japan, I don't think, and rake in a whole lot of money. So he's going to be looking to fight, so you might as well take advantage of that. But, yeah, I mean, again, just don't showcase him and say, hey, we got Brandon Vera. You know, you do get him and you put him on the show, and, you know, lots of cuts. You see the WEC guys already having an effect on the 155-pound class in UFC. Since we've done a show last, Hazlett, Varner, Horodecki, Marcus Davis, and Antonio McKee have all been cut.
Yeah, there's, I mean, the roster is just swelling massively with the WEC influx. And we've only got about 30 seconds here, but very quickly, who did you have as a winner for the main event of UFC 125?
I had actually Frankie Edgar winning it.
You had Frankie Edgar winning?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt my feelings. The decision doesn't hurt my feelings. The decision for them to have a third fight doesn't hurt my feelings either. But yeah, I thought Frankie edged it out.
Did you have any interesting scores, or was it first round gray 10-8 and the rest were all for Frankie?
That was pretty much it.
Well, join the club. That's pretty much what everybody scored there. You could argue 10-7 for the first round, but now is not the time to get into that. We got a lot of news to cover. We're going to do it when we come back from the break. And then later on the show, Mikey Whipwreck, listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. After the next break, we're going to be joined by former ECW champion Mikey Whipwreck. He's going to be talking about his neck injuries. He's running his own promotion, actually, for those of you that have not heard his interviews on Figure Four Daily on our website. Running his own promotion and doing a lot of other stuff as well. He appeared on our Christmas show in a state of inebriation as well. That's available at WrestlingObserver.com as well if you want to sign up and check that out. But Mike, a little bit of news before we get on with the Mikey interview. First off, I wanted to talk very quickly about some poor news for TNA. They're going into 2011, and last year, as they went into 2010, and many people were eagerly awaiting the January 4th head-to-head battle of WWE and TNA, it seemed like changes might be afoot. They brought in Hogan, they brought in Bischoff, and granted, I didn't think these were great ideas, but suffice to say, a lot of people did, and at least it felt like they were attempting to make some change, even if going in, you kind of figured this was not going to be a great idea. Going into 2011, however, they have lost a reaction. The show has been canceled by Spike TV. They do not have a broadcast outlet at this point in the UK. They supposedly will have one at some point, but Sky has not made the official announcement of where the show is going to be following the shutdown, I believe, of Bravo. So that's bad news. They do no longer have a pay-per-view outlet in the UK. Now you've got to get all of your television and pay-per-views from TNA On Demand. So essentially, going into the new year, things do not look good for TNA. In fact, things look rather depressing. They have nothing on the horizon that looks like it could be a game changer. There are no real names that could come in and turn things around unless you expect Matt Hardy to do that. It just seems to be like a very depressing time for TNA right now.
Well, now's the time where you'd probably look around and go, okay, now we have to get creative. Boy, that's a problem. You know, thinking about how you were just, you know, talking about TNA, and there's a lot to be said about the TV show and the production and, you know, dumb things from over time, like, you know, giving away the main event result in the bumper commercial that, you know, right before the show ended, and, you know, stupid things like that. And I think about Ring of Honor had to tape their show at the beginning of December, right before a huge pay-per-view, when they went to the Davis Arena for the shows that are airing right now. Can you imagine TNA having to do that? You know, it would be worse than what WCW did when they started taping in Orlando, you know, in the 90s. It would be terrible, and they just, you know, it's not that hard. They make everything so difficult. You know, take what made Reaction good with the, you know, a lot of the great camera work and the aesthetics and the types of interviews that were done and put them into, you know, Impact. Don't have so much on Impact. Extend things out a little bit, too, so you're still not just throwing a whole bunch of stuff up against the wall and, you know, for people to try to remember, and they never do. It's just, there are easy things, again, like, is said over and over, that they can tweak. They have tons and tons of talent there. It's just hitting on something and having enough, you know, foresight to see what's coming next and sticking with coherent, normal types of situations instead of always looking for goofy swerves.
Speaking of TNA, we got a question here. What is going on with Desmond Wolfe, and why isn't TNA using him? I expect him back at any time, and it was kind of being kept top secret why he was not being used, but the impression that I got was that the real reason was not a big deal, particularly by TNA standards. In fact, it was just like a really stupid thing, and again, I expect him back. Maybe he'll make his return tonight. I don't know. I'd have to think about how that would play into storylines, but that's an impossible task.
If he's not going to be teamed up with Brutus Magnus and they can figure out something else to do with him coming back as part of Immortal, I guess, could make some sense to get back in Immortal's good graces, go eliminate RVD.
That's actually not a bad idea. He could be the mystery opponent for RVD, although then I would expect him to lose in his first night back. I would be fine with, for example, him replacing AJ Styles, and then they could have a series of babyface versus heel matches.
That wouldn't be a bad idea either, I guess. And it's still, I mean, Brutus Magnus was out in all this too, and I don't know exactly what his status is right now either.
Let's see. This person here says, quick question. Do you think UFC should push their champions to carry their belts around to add more prestige to it, like interviews and UFC events?
Yeah, only when it's necessary.
Yes.
I mean, I think when you can go on certain talk shows and you bring the belt out and you set it right there, everybody goes, ooh, or something like that. It all depends on the situation. I mean, I wouldn't, for 60 Minutes or a news show or something, or make an appearance on CNN, I don't think you'd walk around rocking the belt. But I think if you roll onto a Daily Show or something like that, you can use it as part of a bit or have it there just for the aesthetic appeal.
Yeah, I always, I think that like a championship belt is always good as something that is sitting there on the desk while you're in a suit. You know, something like that. I mean, if you're on the Nick Kids Choice Awards and you're about to get slimed and you're standing there wearing your belt, you look like a complete idiot. So it is the right time, the right place, and some people understand that, and some people like Tim Sylvia don't. All right, this person says we've heard stories about how protective Randy Savage was of Elizabeth back in the WWF days. During his feud with Jake Roberts, do you recall any stories about Savage being hesitant about the angle where Jake slapped her?
You know, I'm not sure.
I would guess that was probably not a big deal because Randy Savage probably trusted Jake to not kill his wife. I think it was a different sort of protective. It was not worried about, she's going to take a work slap, hopefully a work slap in an angle. It was more like, I don't want these dudes away from the ring to get their hands on my woman. I think that was more the concern right there.
Well, and she was with him in ICW, the promotion his father ran in Kentucky, in the Outlaw promotion that went up against the Jarretts, too, where they did a lot of over-the-top hardcore and wacky stuff, and it's Jake Roberts and his family's history and the respect that they had too. I mean, yeah, I think that was probably, if you were going to trust anybody, it'd be the situation like that.
Bart here says he's really enjoying wrestling right now, even though I think it was stupid for them to jump the gun on the Morrison Miz match. He said it was nice they got the first televised match of 2011, but in the end it was a shame. Hell of a match. Looking forward to where CM Punk Barrett Nexus is going, and looking forward to my second ROH show in a month. Just got my tickets the other day. It should be a good time. Probably will be a good time. I will say that with Miz and Morrison, I really thought they should do that match at the Royal Rumble. I really did. But I guess there was just grave concern of not having John Cena or Randy Orton in a title match at the Royal Rumble. So they got that feud over with, and now, unless, I mean, it's still possible that there will be changes leading into the Rumble. I mean, that four-way we were talking about with Lawler, Miz, Morrison, and Orton, I mean, it very well could happen at the Rumble, because it doesn't matter. It does not matter if Jerry Lawler or anyone else gets a championship match at the Rumble, because, as noted earlier, everybody buys the Rumble for the Rumble. So you can do any match you want on the undercard, including Edge versus Dolph Ziggler, which they would never, at this point, headline a pay-per-view with. If he does well, if people seem interested in it, then Ziggler may work his way into that position. But, it's not like they would have headlined TLC with a singles match with Edge and Ziggler. It's just they wouldn't do it. So Rumble is the show to take these risks on. And I wish they would have taken the chance on Miz and Morrison as opposed to going back to Orton, who, as somebody noted, I believe Orton and Cena have been in some fashion involved in a title match on every pay-per-view for like 2.5 years.
I mean, kind of a slightly fearful thought go through in my mind. Imagine Jerry Lawler making it all the way and being one of the contenders in the Elimination Chamber.
That's a scary thought?
It's a scary thought in that, as much as I love Jerry Lawler, it's amazing that Jerry Lawler, it's not amazing, actually. It's just, in a way, it's sad for WWE that Jerry Lawler is a legitimate contender. With all these guys that they have, it's like, Jerry Lawler, because of, beating the dead horse over and over again with so many guys and so many stop start, pulling the trigger that, somebody people are emotionally invested as was the announcer. The 60-year-old announcer who is still putting on better performances than lots of other guys for, obviously scaled for a 60-year-old man.
Yeah, and as many people are aware, Jerry Lawler, in all of his years in wrestling, has never had a match at a WrestleMania. And I don't think it's going to be a title match, but it would kind of be nice if he got his shot with somebody at some point on WrestleMania this year. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, going to be joined by Mikey Whipwreck here at Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and another famous Mike. Mikey Whipwreck is here on the line, former ECW champion, currently the promoter, I guess, for the NYWC in New York City, and he's got neck surgery looming, and he's not going to do any swearing on this program. Mikey, how you doing?
I feel like you're in the movie Groundhog Day, where the same thing happens over and over and over again.
Over and over again.
Well, you know why that is. That's because your doctor keeps telling you to get that surgery, and you tell him no.
You keep putting it off.
Well, I think it's for a different reason, but yeah, I keep putting it off.
That's the rumor we've heard, that you keep putting this surgery off over and over again.
Yeah, can I blow your spot, Brian? Can I blow it?
You can if you want to, sure.
Well, see, folks listening, the fact that we're doing this a second time, because we recorded this once the first time when it was all new and improv and fresh, but Brian screwed up and ended the segment early, so we have to re-record it.
Yeah.
So it's not really Wrestling Observer Live, it's Wrestling Observer Live to Tape.
This is a very Wrestling Observer Tape segment right here.
Wrestling Observer, yeah. Memorex.
And actually, the real reason is that Mikey kept swearing unrepentantly, and we could not allow that air.
That is a lie, and I kept saying to myself in the back of my head, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. I didn't say it, and it's all for naught, because we can't use it.
Well, Mikey, I don't want to start on a depressing note, but we're going to here, since we already talked about a lot of other stuff, and now I need to move on to something we hadn't talked about before. I was actually going to talk about this in the next segment, but let's get into it right now. Val Puccio, you knew him.
Big Val. Yeah, he was a good guy. I didn't know him all that well, but, you know, I worked him back in the day. He actually broke my collarbone.
Really?
Throwing me down very hard. But I think it was mostly my fault.
For those of you that are not sure what we're talking about here, Val Puccio passed away. He was one of the original guys to use the name The Undertaker. And according to legend, when WWE debuted, or WWF at the time, debuted Mark Calloway as The Undertaker, he received a payoff. Is that the story? And then some matches as well on WWE events?
I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
Yeah.
But him and Tony... his brother Tony, they were good. I mean, they were big, heavy guys, man, but they were good.
And he worked with you in the early days and broke your collarbone, so tell us the story.
Well, he was 500 pounds. I was like 180 pounds at the time, and we tied up. And he was going to push me off, you know, so I'd take a bump. But he kind of pulled me in and pushed me down, but he pushed me like straight down.
Oh,
no. So I took it on my shoulder. I said, oh, man, something popped. It didn't feel good. And then we tied up again, did the same thing, and the second time it just broke. So I think I took it wrong twice.
What year was this, just out of curiosity?
I don't know, 94, 95 maybe.
Oh, okay.
When I had no clue.
Well,
you know what's funny? You know what's funny? I gave you a hard time about Mr. Meltzer not liking me.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went back after doing the Christmas show. I went back and said, all right, well, why does Dave dislike my work so much? Well, I went back and I watched tapes of me in 94, 95. Oh, good God. That was brutal.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even talk about it anymore. It's disturbing. It's disturbing.
Now, Mikey, we talked in the unaired segment, which we'll recap here in a bit, about your upcoming neck surgery, which you have, in fact, it is true, put off numerous times. Now, what do you remember being like your first injury? Do you remember your first pro wrestling injury?
My first injury. I remember my first concussion.
Really? What was that?
It was against Nails for the old WWN. I don't think that ever aired at the old Manhattan Center.
Mm-hmm.
I took a bump over the top, and when I went, I missed the top rope with my hand and kind of just splat and hit the back of my head on the guardrail, the bottom of the guardrail.
And saw stars or vomited?
No, I just got like a big white flash, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man. And I just remember kind of being like loopy.
I see.
And that was kind of it.
And then, like, as far as injuries, was that collarbone injury, like, the first major one that you remember, or was there something that really sticks out?
You know what? I kind of don't remember. I remember I blew my knee out a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
either right before that or after that. But the collarbone was the one I realized that I couldn't, like, work on it because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't take a bump. I couldn't move.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I remember going, oh, man, this actually hurts.
Now, if you go to Wikipedia, one of my favorite wrestling websites, and you Google your name, of course, the first thing that comes up here as far as your career is...
Wait a minute. Hold on. How can you go to Wikipedia and Google my name? Would you have to Google my name and then go to Wikipedia?
The man makes the point, Brian.
There is a search button, and I was using the term Google as a verb.
Ah.
But you're correct, yes.
But how can you Google if you're not in Google?
Well, search for your name in Wikipedia. I apologize. Well,
that's like me walking to the bookstore and I'm going to Google the magazine section.
but it's like, you know, when nobody says give me a tissue paper, they say give me a Kleenex.
That's right. Kids nowadays are growing up and they're going to go to the bookstore and they're going to get on that computer and they're going to Google the book of their choice.
Fair enough.
Well, branding.
Next question.
The first five words of this career highlight... I was waiting for you to laugh there when I said career highlights. No, seriously.
Well, that's five words. That about sums it up.
No. Whipwreck was trained in 1993, it says. And you mentioned in 1995 having no idea what you were doing. So explain this training.
Well, I was trained by Sonny Blaze. End of story.
Don't like to bury people here on this program, but I will note that on Wikipedia, Sonny Blaze's name is in red, meaning there is no entry for him on Wikipedia.
Well, that about sums it up. Very nice guy. You know, taught me the politics, not the politics, but the politeness in the locker room, say hello to everybody, shake everybody's hand, and work the left. Other than that, nil.
Well, at least he knew to work the left.
Yeah, he's dyslexic, though, so I don't know. That made a...
Now, did he get you booked on those? How did it come about that you... Because those were the Paul E. shows, I guess he was trying to do with Jim Crockett for the World Wrestling Network thing. I mean, how did you get on those shows?
Well, I was... the ECW thing came first in January 94. Not January 94, I guess, where we put the ring up that Sonny rented the ECW. And me and my buddy Craig just started doing high spots and backflips and stuff. And Drew Styles saw us, and then Paul saw us, and goes, hey, you want to wrestle? I said, okay. And that was it. And then he called me up, like, later, 2 weeks later, and said, I got this thing I'm doing with Crockett. Can you come down? I said, okay. And that was kind of it, really, as far as the W. We only did it once, in New York, at least. I don't know if he did other ones in Texas, I think. It was rumors, but I only did the one in Manhattan Center.
Now, when you... I mean, by the end of your career, you had turned into quite the worker, and obviously you're training guys nowadays. And when did the light bulb switch on? Was there a particular match? Was there a particular guy that you worked with? When was the transition point between when you look back now and go, oh, my God, and when you look back and go, you know, that wasn't too bad right there?
You know, I really couldn't tell you. 'Cause I never watched my stuff, so I didn't really... I didn't really notice. I just went back and watched some old stuff and realized it was terrible. And then I watched some later stuff with Tajiri.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good. So somewhere in those 4 years, I kind of, a light bulb went off, and I guess I kind of got it.
Sure.
I think it was just experience overall, just kind of going, because this first match I watched, I looked very confused, and I had, like, happy feet, which took, like, a lot of little steps, like a lot of wasted motion. And I think as you kind of get more and more comfortable with it, you're kind of more deliberate in what you do. So you're not really questioning yourself the whole time.
Are you talking a little happy feet where, for example, when you run the ropes, you take 18 steps?
Yeah, midget feet. That's what I tell my guys. I said, you ever see a midget run, a small person run?
Sure.
And it's funny. Why? Because they take 8 million little steps.
Yeah, I never got the little steps running across the ring deal.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Some guys, they just... scared to take big steps. Take big steps.
And people still do that nowadays.
Yeah, they do. But, I don't know. It's just kind of, I just think, like they always tell, like the guys, you know, you need practice. You need to work. You just need to work. You just need to work. It's true.
Now, you guys in the NYWC, I guess they do probably a couple of matches a month, and there are promoters that, you know, anybody who's been around independent wrestling, you know the promoters that they will say, if you're working for me, you can't work for anybody else, which is always kind of funny when you're running two shows a month and you want your guys to get better. I mean, I presume that you encourage these guys to work elsewhere. Do you try to help get them bookings elsewhere? How do you run the show?
They can pretty much do what they want.
Yeah.
You know, they're like local groups. I prefer they don't work for. Just because they're local. So why should we use you if somebody else can see you too? Kind of takes your value away. But it used to be kind of actually work anywhere you can, just to get experience.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of like I don't recommend that too much unless you're going somewhere that has some decent talent.
So there are local groups that you would prefer that they do not work for.
Yeah, but I don't tell them no.
Sure.
I actually don't tell them anything. I let the owner do that. It's more like frowned upon than like a rule.
Exactly. And how long have you been involved with NYWC?
2003.
Oh my God! And now granted, if you head out there, I mean this is not your local independent promotion. There have been guys that have gone on to TNA. Matt Stryker, I guess, shows up there somewhat regularly.
Yeah, he's a frequent backstage friend.
A backstage pal of the NYWC.
Backstage pal, yep.
I know we can't really give any scoops on this show, but does he know that he's full of it when he does commentary?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he knows.
Just wanted to make sure that we had that on the record here. Yeah, Matt Stryker's like, when he first started, I thought, my God, this guy is awesome. And then he kept getting more and more wacky and more and more wacky. And then he was, like, outrageous. And now it seems like he's kind of reined himself in a little bit.
Maybe a little. I don't really talk too much about his company because I don't want to bury his company to his face.
So
it's more like a, hey, what's up? How's it going?
I understand.
Good. How's life? Are you having fun? Good. End story.
All right. We're going to head to a break here. When we come back, we got a lot of questions for Mike Whipwreck, and we shall continue with this interview. And no, we will not record.
Before you go, are you sure?
Oh, I am positive. So hold on, everybody. Okay. We shall be right back. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and Mikey Whipwreck, former ECW champion. January 29th, NYWC, the Psycho Circus show. It is, I guess, your version of WrestleMania in some ways. Is that correct, Mikey?
That's how the story goes, I think.
That's how the story goes.
Seems to be our big event of the year. It's pretty fun. It's kind of a little bit of everything, that show. We have, like, the Psycho Circus match, which is like a War Games with, like, barbed wire kind of craziness going on. Then we have, like, a Masters of the Match, like a 30-man four-way Ironman match, which is pretty good. With like a Joker's Wild Battle Royal, where the winner goes for any belt he wants. I guess like Money in the Bank, but it's a Battle Royal.
Sure.
So, good stuff. It's actually a fun show. Got a little bit of everything.
Now,
high-flying craziness.
When you mention these barbed wire matches and Psycho Circus matches and that sort of thing, you are, of course, facing neck surgery. We'll talk about that here in a moment. But a career of some crazy bumps, some violence. You mentioned your collarbone was broken. And when you have these young guys on your shows and, you know, they're backstage with Mikey Whipwreck, the former champion. He took bumps on cement. He did some crazy things. I mean, I presume they come up with some pretty stupid ideas. And when they run them by you, give us a shortened version of the speech that perhaps you give them.
I said, you can do whatever you want. Just don't hit each other in the head. I said, I prefer you don't do it. And they go, yeah, but you used to do it. You used to do this. You used to do that. I said, nah, smoke and mirrors. It's all fake.
It's fake cement.
I kind of, you know. They tell me what they want to do, and I either say, okay, but, and I have to revise it to make it safe, or I just go, no.
And shots to the head are just flat-out banned.
Yep. Yeah. If you do a shot in the head, I got to know about it, and the guy's hands better be up.
Yeah, and what is the stupidest thing that anyone has ever come to you suggesting?
Stupidest stupidest thing ever.
Because there was a guy, I'm sure you probably heard this story, I forget his name, he's since passed away, but he had this idea, and he actually sent Heyman letters saying that he was willing to have, I think, like his finger cut off for an angle in ECW, and Paul thought he was nuts, but, you know, he would have had no problem showing up and chopping his finger off on television.
That's good.
Anything that nutty?
No. Just like stupid things I have, and I get, you know, stupid things I want to take and things like that. Nothing so outlandish where it sticks out.
Sure.
It's just things where I say, you know what, there's risk, and then there's just stupidity.
Yes.
And this is not like a national TV broadcast. It's not like a pay-per-view. You're not getting paid, you know, thousands of dollars or even tens of thousands, depending on the situation. So, no, you're not going to do that.
Now, you said you didn't go back and watch your matches. You would just keep working. Did you watch anybody else's matches as you were in ECW to get ideas or to watch them? Or did you just continue to work and never really watch a whole lot of anything when it came to wrestling on tape?
I watched everything but myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd always sit at the monitor and watch matches. I'd watch old tapes and things like that, but I just couldn't, just watching myself. I just couldn't do it. And now, looking back, I know why I didn't.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I can understand not wanting to watch yourself, but at the same time, I mean, in a sport like wrestling, you would almost think that you'd want to watch yourself and see these things that you were doing horribly so that you could improve on them next time.
No, because what was good was Taz and Dreamer and Paulie, they would all tell me what worked and what didn't work. Or if I would do something, they said, you know, that's just not working for you.
Sure.
You know? And then when they opened the ECW school in Long Island, I was training with Taz and Perry like every day.
Mm-hmm.
So they would kind of see it, and if something sucked, they would tell me.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of do that, and if they see it, like, hey, let's don't do that, do this. You know, or try this way instead.
So basically,
you cursed. Damn it. I slipped one in. Oh, well. Sorry.
I think I may have talked over you, thankfully. So,
okay, good.
So basically, you deferred to people that you felt were experts, and if you yourself were watching this stuff, you maybe didn't trust yourself to even know if anything was good or not. You just presumed it was all horrible.
Right. Well, I never presumed it was horrible. I presumed it was okay. It was terrible politics.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people now go, you know, watch tapes of the Midnight Express or watch tapes of certain people. Is there anyone you suggest to your guys where you say, hey, watch, I don't know, Flair Steamboat New Orleans, or is there a particular matches or things that you want your guys to watch or you suggested them to watch?
It depends what they wanted to do. Like, if they wanted to watch tag team wrestling, I'd have them watch Arn and Tully or the Rock and Roll Express, either like the NWA guys. I said, if you wanted to learn how to sell, you'd have to watch Ricky Morton, Sabu was really good, Selling Dreamer was really good. As far as just technical stuff goes, for Steamboat, Shawn Michaels, you know, if you want like the hardcore stuff, and of course Cactus, guys like that. So I'd say just watch everybody. You know, you can don't just watch one thing. Watch everybody. Just watch everything you can from the 70s, 80s, 90s. Watch stuff you see now to kind of keep current. But you can never watch too much wrestling if that's what you want to do and you want to dedicate your life, because you'll find something from somebody. Like, I used to take stuff from Jannetty all the time. You know, my three favorite growing up was Cactus Jack, Randy Savage, and Marty Jannetty. So I take all three of them, put them together.
That is an
odd. And as far as character goes, you mix a little Chris Farley in there, you mix a little Ozzy Osbourne in there, and then you're good to go.
That is an interesting trio of men.
Yeah.
Randy Savage, Mick Foley, and Marty Jannetty.
Well, that's a hell of a quintet when you add in Chris Farley and Ozzy Osbourne.
That is true.
Yeah. Towards the end, that's kind of what you get. It's, you know, just make stupid faces, act stupid, act like you're fat, like Chris Farley.
You're fat. He was extremely fat.
He was heavy.
I see. When you look back at your matches and you find them to have sucked, I mean, what are some of the things that really stick out to you nowadays? I mean, if you were a trainer and yourself in 1993 came to your school, I mean, what advice would you be giving this young Mikey fellow?
Feet, footwork.
Yeah.
Most important thing is your feet and your tie-up. Everything else you can kind of learn as you, because, you know, that's all just, you know, again, even your chain wrestling and your spots, it's all footwork. If your feet are screwed up, you know, you're screwed from the beginning. It's like building a house on a poor foundation. Your feet are wrong, the foundation's bad, your house is going to fall down.
Would you agree that about 95% of the tie-ups today absolutely suck?
Yes. I would.
Why is it so difficult?
I don't know. I, most of them, it looks like it's they're already thinking of the next thing.
Yeah.
They're saying, okay, I'm going to tie up. All right, here we go. We're tying up. Well, it's like, okay, what's my first spot?
Yeah. Some of these is just like, I go back and I watch old, like when you watch old stuff on 24/7 and you see these old workers in the 80s and, you know, they're world class or wherever, and they just lock up, and it's like, okay, that's already better than every match I saw on Raw this week. Just that lock up right there.
Yeah, lock up. They're very important.
Yeah. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, one thing at a time, people.
How do you train it personally?
Kind of like shooting a basketball. Tie up like a basketball. Don't come straight in. Up.
Up and over?
Up and over.
Yeah.
But not, when I first had over exaggerate. Up and over.
Yeah.
But,
now, actually, for both you guys, since you've both done training, and has there ever been anyone who actually has not been able to master that, where it's just like, all right, get out?
Everyone.
To the point where they actually just could not continue on, like that baffled them that bad?
Yeah, there's been plenty of guys where they can't get a tie up. I get plenty of guys who can't circle. They can't walk. which is never good. We're in the ring going, oh, kill me now, God.
Actually, you know what? I swear to God, there was somebody at buddy school once who, at the beginning of the match, when you were supposed to circle the guy, you know, just, you know, walk around the guy to circle, he'd get dizzy.
You know, that's not surprising.
And this is not like he's spinning in a circle. It's like, well, you circle the guy. It's like a big circle in a 20-foot ring, and he'd get dizzy.
That's pretty bad. I'd probably say that this wrestling is probably not for him.
Well, it didn't end up being for him.
I was like, can you imagine him on a moving sidewalk sort of thing at an airport or something like that, just falling over?
Oh, yeah. Now, Mikey, let me ask you this, because speaking of buddy school, he once had a man try to break in at age 53. What is the oldest guy you've ever had trying to break into this business?
I don't know, 30, 40, 38, 40, something like that.
Really? That's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
I'd say 50-something is probably pretty late.
Yeah, 53 was pushing it, and also he didn't make it in this business. I know you're shocked. Now
I'm very shocked.
We talked about this before when we erased it, but you've got neck surgery upcoming. You've put it off several times, and I've been told from an exclusive source whose name I cannot mention that when you went to the doctor, he showed you footage of this on YouTube.
Yes, YouTube footage. Very exciting to see. Look, see what I've been for.
Now, was this like a secret YouTube channel that your average person was unable to access, or did he just go on the internet and Google it?
Yeah, no, you just you Google it.
Hmm.
You get the interior something, I forget what they call it.
Now, as a patient,
you can see it.
As a patient, were you sitting there kind of going, why the hell did you just show me a video of a man putting a knife in some dude's neck as a way to encourage me to have this treatment done?
I guess he felt it was beneficial for me to see exactly what was going to happen. And, which you know, I don't really know if that was really good or not.
Hey, well, what was your reaction?
Not, I keep putting it off.
Now, what kind of knife is this, by the way?
What do you call it? Scalpel, I guess. I don't know. What do you call it? Those surgical knives.
So it wasn't one of those shark-cutting knives that, for example, Samoa Joe was carrying around on Impact.
No, it's not like a machete. No, it's a little more of an intricate, finer detail type of item.
So something that someone with skill might actually use, and not just a barbarian out in the woods.
Yeah, not some nut job that's going to come out of deepest darkest Africa with Akeem. Some kind of weirdness going on. I don't know.
Now, when you get this surgery done, are you thinking that this might be it, or are you going to just see how it goes?
Yeah, I'll be back in a week.
A week?
No, it's like I couldn't even do rehab for 3 months. So I don't know. You're probably looking, I don't know, probably like a year maybe.
My God.
Probably do anything.
So, I don't know. Is this just, I presume, laying around in bed for 3 months and you could start doing some light weights and then try and get back into the gym?
Yeah. I don't even know, really. I just know it's like 2 weeks before I can do anything. And then after that, I could probably, like, drive, I guess, or whatever. But no, any type of rehab or anything for 3 months.
We've got about 30 seconds left in this segment, but give everybody a look at some of the alumni of the NYWC, some of the guys that you've trained. I think most people know Red, but who else should we know and who else should we be looking out for?
Well, you got Red, of course, Jay Lethal for a little bit, Woo Woo Guy, Zach Ryder, Kurt Hawkins, Trent Beretta, you know, and that's, I think that's what, those are the guys that are signed now.
Did you see Trent Beretta's dive outside of the ring with Drew?
Yeah, I don't recommend that.
Was that an example on your show? Some guy would recommend or suggest that, and you just say, kid, no.
Yes. Except, well, the only saving grace was they had that nice wrestling padding on the floor.
That's true.
So at least take the sting out. I know about the thud, but the sting. So at least it was safe in an unsafe, crazy, reckless manner.
Well, Mikey, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today, and we'll get you on Figure Four Daily at some point in the future where we don't have to worry about you accidentally spitting out cuss words. But everybody check it out. January 29th, NYWC.com is the place to go, and we'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to wrap up the show, want to do one final email here from Michael. Brian, are Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett totally professional with one another, or there's still a lot of anger about the Karen Angle situation? What have you heard lately? I guess you'll find out tonight. I wouldn't worry about it too much. Jeff Jarrett, of course, and Karen Angle are now married in real life. Kurt Angle is also married to somebody else, and so I think that they'll be professional in the ring tonight during their exhibition match. Although, you know, I don't put it past Vince Russo to book some sort of deal where supposedly Kurt shoots on Jeff to set up some sort of storyline down the road. Hadn't even entered my mind till I read that email, but I will just say that if anything questionable happens in the match tonight, that I would take it with a grain of salt. Let's just put it that way. But TNA Genesis is tonight. And Mike, again, we're going into 2011, and things don't look good for TNA, but hopefully they kick it off with a strong show tonight.
And again, give Williams and Styles enough time. Let Kazarian hopefully has a good one with Lethal and Beer Money in the guns. That should be good enough right there. And yeah, slow everything down, dudes. Try to refocus here.
And that is it for today. Head over to WrestlingObserver.com right now. Dave Meltzer is going to be up doing live running play-by-play of the event. We'll give you the results of all of the matches, and then later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave and I are going to be up with a brand new radio show talking all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll run down the TNA show, and we'll talk about all of the big matches. Of course, a lot of other shows up there as well. If you sign up, it's $10.99 per month. Gives you full access to all of our radio shows. We do about 20 of them every single week. Plus, if you sign up, you get full access to our archives. We've got shows dating back to 2005, thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands of radio shows, and we got a lot of great shows with Mikey Whipwreck where, quite frankly, he does not hold back. So check those out at WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to be here next week with a brand new show. Mike and I will be back. We'll be talking about the TNA pay-per-view. We'll recap it. We'll talk about the new set of tapings, talk about the Royal Rumble, and a lot more. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.